Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Anna Mateo and Gregory Stockel. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, a Brazilian company is offering a way to help save the Amazon rainforest by selling non-fungible tokens. A non-fungible token, or NFT, is based on a technology called blockchain, which is also used with digital money known as cryptocurrencies. An NFT can be attached to a piece of digital artwork or other things existing in digital form. The NFT can be used to provide proof that the pieces are real. While anyone can view the work, the buyer has official ownership rights over the pieces. The Brazilian company Nemus owns 410 square kilometers of Amazon rainforest. It began selling NFTs to permit buyers to support different sized areas of forest. The money is used to help protect the trees, regrow cleared areas, and support environmental development. NFT holders will not own the land itself, but they will be able to view important information about its protection. That information includes satellite imagery, licensing, and other documentation, said Nemus founder Flavio de Mera Pena. He said Nemus has sold 10% of its first offering of NFTs for 8,000 hectares on its first day. Pena told Reuters that he thinks the company's NFTs will continue to sell quickly. Areas of land differ in size, from less than 1 hectare to 81 hectares. Buyers will be able to find the area of land they are supporting with online maps. NFTs for the smallest areas of land sell for $150 and the largest for $51,000, said Pena. He hopes to raise up to $5 million to buy an additional 2 million hectares of land in Amazonas State. Pena said the money will also support environmental development efforts, such as harvesting acai berries and Brazil nuts from local communities. Each NFT comes with artwork of an Amazon plant or animal. The artwork is produced by content developer and NFT publisher Concept Art House of San Francisco, California. Some critics have questioned the value of NFTs for environmental causes. Blockchain technology requires great computing power, increasing the use of electricity that releases climate warming greenhouse gases. But Pena disagrees. He says saving threatened areas of the Amazon far outweighs the environmental cost of trading in NFTs.
For some people, seeing a beautiful event in nature can be unforgettable and sometimes life-changing. That is what happened to Franco Cagnoli. The Italian man was so moved by seeing the sun rise over a village in the mountains of central Italy that the experience changed his life. Cagnoli told Reuters that when he saw the sun rise over the castle of Rocca Colaccio, he made it his goal to help revive the medieval village. A castle is an old building with thick walls and tall towers meant to defend against attacks. No one has lived in Rocca Colaccio since 1957. After World War II, many people left rural areas of Italy for the cities as the country's economy improved. The old village was established hundreds of years ago during what is known as the medieval period in Europe. However, like many places in Italy, the area is enjoying a revival. This rebirth has been fueled by low prices, different kinds of jobs, and a desire for a quieter life. To put it in romantic terms, there is a love story between me and Rocca Colaccio, Cagnoli said as he showed visitors the castle. The village is known as the Light of Abruzzo. Abruzzo is the name of the area in central Italy. The castle sits 1,400 meters above sea level. That makes it one of the highest castles in Europe. The village below the castle is now home to two families. Others have bought properties in the village. The castle's foundations were built about 1,000 years ago. The castle began as a tower in a line of connected defensive structures. The purpose was to control the land that stretched inland from the Adriatic Sea. Cagnoli is now 39, but first saw the castle when he was 16. Living in the area capital, L'Aquila, he took a trip, he said, to find himself. He arrived at the castle just as the sun was rising. I was literally blinded by the light. And since that day, something inside me changed, he said. I thought it was the most beautiful place on earth. I felt special energies. His connection with Rocca Colaccio never loosened. In 2012, he moved to Colaccio, a village of about 80 residents, 3 kilometers away from the castle. Today, he is the castle's caretaker and head of a cooperative. The group has 26 members who guide visitors through the castle and take care of it. One Rocca Colaccio resident, Valeria Bafani, left Rome in 1996. Now she runs an online business selling woolen products. She makes the products herself using an old-fashioned wooden device called a loom. People of the previous generation didn't appreciate, or thought they didn't appreciate, the land they lived on, Bafani said. Today's teenagers, like my children, are proud of their land and are happy if they can stay here. Others appreciate the beauty of the area. The castle is where the 1985 movie Lady Hawk was filmed. The future of Rocca Colaccio was helped recently when Italy's culture ministry included it among 21 places that will receive $22 million. The money is to rebuild the ruins and to make improvements for visitors. I'm Ana Mateo.
An Israeli company will test its equipment on astronauts in space, expected next week during a SpaceX flight to the International Space Station, or ISS. The company Brain.Space has been developing methods to study brain activity for 4 years. The company said on Monday that three astronauts on the planned private space firm Axiom Space's mission to the ISS will wear its devices. The equipment will be a head covering or helmet that can record electrical brain activity through a test called an electroencephalogram, or EEG. The 10-day mission is the first private trip to the space station. The launch is set for April 3rd with four astronauts. Brain.Space chief executive is Yair Levy. He told Reuters scientists know that a low-gravity environment affects the way the body works. He said that such an environment will probably also affect the brain. He said his company would like to study that. Levy said that data has continuously been collected on heart rate, skin resistance, and muscle mass through measurements in space, but not brain activity. Brain.Space's effort joins 30 experiments that will be included in the so-called Rakia mission to the ISS. Three of the four astronauts, including Israeli Eitan Stebi, will wear the special helmet. The device has 460 points that connect to the top of the head. It performs a number of functions for 20 minutes a day. During that time, data will be sent to a computer on the space station. The company said one of these jobs, called the visual oddball, has been effective at finding unusual brain activity. Similar studies using these functions have been completed on Earth. After the mission, Brain.Space will compare the EEG data to look for any differences in brain activity between Earth and space. Company officials say such experiments are needed because long-term space exploration and off-world living are within grasp. Brain.Space said it raised $8.5 million in investments. It describes itself as a brain infrastructure company. Brain.Space is working with the Brain Sciences Department at Israel's Ben Gurion University to turn huge amounts of data into useful knowledge. Levy said he hoped the space mission would help organizers, researchers, and computer program developers. Space is an accelerator. The idea is to revolutionize and make possible brain activity apps, products, and services that's as easy as pulling data from an Apple Watch, Levy said. He said measuring mental health disorders like ADHD, could be a possible goal. I'm Gregory Stockel.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Imagine a time machine. You've just climbed into it for the purpose of visiting the United States in the 1950s. What would you expect to find? In the 1950s, America was a nation whose population was growing as never before. It was a nation where the popular culture of television was both reflecting and influencing its lifestyle. But it was also a nation that believed it was on the edge of nuclear war. Americans were happy to put World War II behind them. The war ended in 1945. People were hopeful. They thought the world would be peaceful for a while. By 1950, however, political tensions were high again. The United States and the Soviet Union were allies in World War II. But after the war, they became enemies in what came to be known as the Cold War. Communists took control of one Eastern European nation after another. The Soviet Union, led by Joseph Stalin, strengthened its armed forces. However, the United States thought America alone possessed the most powerful weapon of all, the atomic bomb. But in 1949, a United States Air Force plane discovered strange conditions in the atmosphere. What was causing them? The answer came quickly. The Soviet Union had tested its own atomic bomb. The nuclear race was on. The two nations competed to build weapons of mass destruction. A doomsday clock on the cover of the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists warned of a growing danger of nuclear destruction. Members of that group were afraid of what science had produced, and even more afraid of what it could produce. By 1949, the time on the doomsday clock was 3 minutes to midnight. In 1950, North Korea invaded South Korea. The Korean War increased efforts in the United States to develop a weapon even more deadly than the atomic bomb. That weapon was the hydrogen bomb. The Soviets were also working to develop their own hydrogen bomb. Some Americans built bomb shelters in their backyards, hoping to have a safe place for their families in case of a nuclear attack. Other Americans, however, were tired of being afraid. After years of sacrifice, they wanted to enjoy the good life in a growing economy. 1952 was a presidential election year. Americans elected Dwight Eisenhower, a military hero of World War II. The years after the war produced the baby boom generation. In 1950, there were 24 million young children in America. By 1960, that number was 35 million. More families meant the need for more houses, and bigger families needed bigger houses. In 1950 alone, almost 1.5 million new homes were built in America. Most of these new houses were located in suburbs, the areas outside cities. People moved to the suburbs because they thought the schools there were better than city schools. They also liked having more space for their children to play in. More space meant children had room to lay out electric train sets. In a lot of American homes, playing with electric trains was an activity that brought the whole family together. Television ads for Lionel trains even featured baseball great Joe DiMaggio.
Lionel trains proudly present the Joe DiMaggio Show, starring the Yankee clipper Joe DiMaggio himself.
The late 1950s brought the Barbie doll and a big circular tube of colorful plastic called the hula hoop. People had to learn to move their hips in a circular motion, like a hula dancer in Hawaii, to spin it around their body. Hula hoops became hugely popular in America. Also popular was the poodle cut, not for dogs, but for women who wanted to look stylish. They fixed their hair into lots of small curls, like the hair on a poodle. Actress Mary Martin had made the poodle cut famous in the musical South Pacific. That play opened on Broadway in New York in 1949 and ran into the early 1950s.
A kiss on the hand may be quite continental, but diamonds are a girl's best friend.
In Hollywood, one of the biggest movie stars of the 1950s was Marilyn Monroe. She starred in films like Gentlemen Prefer Blondes in 1953. Her platinum blonde hairstyle also became popular among American women.
I woke up this morning, you know, and the sun was shining, and it was nice, and all that type of stuff. And the first thing, I saw you. Boy, this is going to be one terrific day.
Another famous actor was James Dean, best known for the 1955 movie Rebel Without a Cause. That same year, he died in a car accident at the age of 24. In literature, there were writers and poets who came to be known as the Beat Generation. These included Jack Kerouac, Gregory Corso, and Allen Ginsberg. To them, much of life in 1950s America was empty and meaningless. The painter Jackson Pollock represented a spirit of rebellion in art. Pollock would drop paint onto a canvas. What did his works mean? People had to decide for themselves. In music, the rebel was Elvis Presley, the king of rock and roll.
You know I can be found sitting home all alone. If you can't come around, at least please tell the phone. Don't be cruel to who heart is true.
Baby, Elvis was a 21-year-old truck driver when he sang on television for the first time. Some parents and religious leaders thought he was a bad influence. They thought the way he moved his body to the music was too suggestive. But young people screamed for more. They listened to Elvis's music on records, on the radio, and on the television program American Bandstand. American Bandstand became the most popular dance party in America. Every week, young people danced to the latest songs in front of the TV cameras. But it wasn't all rock and roll.
Heavenly shades of night are falling. It's twilight time. Out of the mist, your voice is calling. 'Tis twilight time.
Whether on bandstand-type television programs or at local record hops or at home, young Americans and their parents dance cheek-to-cheek to romantic ballads as well. Television in the 1950s included dramas acted live every week. And there were quiz shows and game shows and comedy programs. If Elvis was the king of rock and roll, Lucille Ball was the queen of comedy. During the 1950s, millions of Americans watched I Love Lucy. Lucille Ball starred with her husband, Desi Arnaz. They played Lucy and Ricky Ricardo. Ricky is a Cuban band leader in New York. Lucy is a housewife who wishes she could be famous like her husband.
What do I have to do?
You're going to get me back on the television show.
How?
I don't know how. But if you don't...
All right.
I will,
Ricky. I'll get you back on the show. Don't even think of what you'll do if I don't.
Lucille Ball and I Love Lucy were both big influences on generations of entertainers and TV comedy producers. Variety shows offered a mix of entertainment. Americans watched shows hosted by comics like Milton Berle, Jackie Gleason, and Sid Caesar. Ed Sullivan was not a comedian, but for years, his show brought new acts into American homes every Sunday night. Television shows were all in black and white. But one night in 1953, Americans got their own time machine glimpse into the future of TV. It happened with an announcement during Sid Caesar's Your Show of Shows.
This is Richard Harkness in Washington. This week will long be remembered in the annals of television. For on Thursday, December 17th, the Federal Communications Commission approved compatible color television.
That meant that owners of TV sets could still watch programs broadcast in color in black and white instead of having to buy a new set. Color TV's popularity grew quickly, and the prices of color TVs came down, meaning more color TVs in American homes and more programs produced in color.
The following program is brought to you in living color on NBC.
During the 1950s, most of the people who appeared on television were white. If black actors appeared, they were usually in jobs working for white people. But in real life, a civil rights movement was beginning to gather strength. Legal battles were fought to end racial separation, especially in public schools. In 1954, the United States Supreme Court made a historic ruling. The case was known as Brown versus Board of Education. The court ruled that the requirement in some states for racially separate schools was unconstitutional. The court rejected the idea that schools for black students could be separate but equal to those attended by white students. By the 1960s, the civil rights movement would shake American society. Dwight Eisenhower was president for most of the 1950s. He faced the problems of communism, nuclear threats, and racial tensions. Ike had a calm way of speaking to the public. Many Americans saw him as a fatherly president. They thought that even in a dark and dangerous world, everything would be all right. Were they correct? We'll try to answer that in future programs.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.